Well, thank you for coming again tonight. It's good to have you back. I would like to point out on the, I've created a new website or a web page on Generation Word. It's just called Jerusalem, and it's got the old videos, or the previous class videos. If you go to the web page, Generation Word, and up here on this left side, you've got a list of things. There's one of them that's called Archives or Message Archives. If you click on that, that will take you to another page that gives you all the messages in an archive from the last 10 years. It's got a column here of topics. It's got a column here of Old Testament and a column here of New Testament, and like John and all the way through the down to Revelation. And not all the books are there. The Old Testament, Genesis up through, you know, 1 Samuel, all the way up through the Old Testament. And then topics, a bunch of different topics, you know. The very last topic right there says Jerusalem. Click on Jerusalem, and that will take you to another page that I'm just adding. It's got 1, 2, 3, a very small letter. Then it's got a video. Click that. That plays the first class video. Right here is number 2. You click that. That plays last week. Over on this side, it says MP3. I'm not sure why you'd want to listen to that. It's just me talking. There's no pictures. There's nothing there. But you can listen to the whole class. What I'm saying, okay, here on page, you know, 17, you can see on the right side, it's not a very good, buddy and I put it on there. And then over here on this column right beside it, I put a bunch of links from another page that I've got on my website called Jerusalem 101. And that's it gives you a whole bunch, all the different locations that we have in the book. But if you click on, like, the Temple Mount, it'll take you to a page for the Temple Mount, and then it'll give you all these pictures and then some more, but they're in color, a little bit bigger. And so anything that I thought that I remembered that I could think of that pertained to what we talked about, I put a link right here. And you click on that, and it'll take you there. So you can watch the video. I mentioned something. Click on that. You can go see it. The same thing down here. Also, what I've done the last 2 weeks, I'm not sure how long I'm going to be able to maintain it because it takes some time. I like doing it. It's just time's a real thing. Is from the class video, me standing here talking, pointing, you know, turn to page one. Whenever I say something like the Temple Mount or the Pool of Siloam or something that we've got pictures of, I'll insert a picture and I'm pointing out, like on the bottom of the left, you see this photo. I'll try and put that in the video for like 2 or 3 seconds. Also, there's several times, like 5 or 6 times in each of the evenings. Like when I was we were talking about walking down the steps to the Pool of Siloam. Well, I've got video of me doing that talking, and so I'll put like a 20-second video clip. So I said, well, you walk down, you can see the ceiling, you see the walls, and all of a sudden, oh, all of a sudden you're there, and you're walking through it with the video on here. And then he comes back to the class. Again, that takes a little bit of time to do that and edit that. I like doing it, but a reality hits me on Tuesday about 7:45 when I've got a report for my first teacher's meeting, and I lose about 8 hours a day. Okay, and I got to go to work. So anyway, that's what we've got there. Are there any questions about anything that we've talked about that, you know, to kind of catch? Anybody, like, drastically confused besides Stanton? But he's a fast learner. He'll catch on. Okay, well, I'm going to pray. We'll do a little bit of a review. We're going to try to go. I want to review the overall history of Jerusalem so we can kind of see the last 4,000, 5,000 years of just what has gone on. So we kind of got a basis of what we're talking about. Because when you do the archaeology on top of the Iron Age, you've got the age of the Persians that were built on top of the Persian. Then you've got, you know, the Herodian comes. And eventually the Byzantine comes, builds on top of that. So all of these things are layered on top of each other. And it's useful to know kind of what the history has been. So I'll try and go through that quickly and make it somewhat interesting. That's the challenge with history. Let's pray. Father, we come to you tonight in the name of Jesus. We do thank you for the chance to meet again in this country, at this location. We ask that tonight might be a productive night, that we would learn, that we'd find encouragement for our faith, and that we'd find things interesting and applicable to our own study. Again, we thank you for the chance to be here at this time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, the first thing I want to do is just simply review a few things. Particularly, we're going to talk, first of all, the topography. You can see this right here. We're going to take this down in just a moment. The topography in review. We've got the Kidron Valley on this side. This valley over on this side would be the Hinnom Valley. There's a remains of an older valley that's been filled in called the Central Valley. This is a mountain or a ridge right here, high. There's a ridge over here called another hill or mount called the Mount of Olives over here. This is the Kidron Valley. This is called the Eastern Ridge because right over here on this side is what is called the Western Ridge. And this is the basic layout of of the city. There's a natural water source right here. You know what that's called? Remember what that was called right there? Gihon Springs is right here. It is still there. It is the reason, one of the key reasons, they even settled there 5,000 years ago. It's still pumping water today. Up in here is another place used to be called the Sheep Pool today. Do you remember what that's called today? It's not much. There's water still there. It's just ruins today. Bethesda. This is Bethesda, Pool of Bethesda. Jesus healed somebody there. This was Hezekiah cut a tunnel through the bedrock here and ran it over to a pool right here that has still got water running through it or past it today. They just excavated it. That's called the Pool of Siloam right down in here. So those are some water sources that we talk about. Anyway, on this eastern ridge, the original city, Melchizedek, the Jebusites, was right here on this part of the city. We call it the City of David. It was the original Jerusalem. It was the Salem. It was Jabesh. It was the city that had walls that David couldn't get into, and eventually he did come through the Gihon Springs. David took this city. He lived in this city. Solomon expanded the city up to include this part, as this ridge right here. It gets higher as you go, and this is Mount Moriah. This is where Abraham came and met Melchizedek here in the King's Valley, or in Engrogel, kind of where the Hinnom and the Kidron Valley meet. That's where he met Melchizedek. This is where he brought Isaac to sacrifice him. There's a place of worship, apparently, on Mount Moriah at that time. Solomon built this in, built a temple on Mount Moriah, and this became the city of Solomon. David's city smaller, Solomon's expanded. As the Jews continued to grow and develop, especially when the Assyrians came in and destroyed the northern kingdom, the northern 10 tribes, a lot of the Israelites in the north from the tribe of Gad, Issachar, Ephraim, they fled the Assyrians down into Hezekiah's kingdom of Judah. This is after they split after Solomon's time. And they had to expand the city over here onto the western ridge. They filled the central valley in, and the city would look something like this in 700 B.C. with Hezekiah. And that's when Hezekiah tunneled and made this into the Pool of Siloam, because the people from this side of the city would have to walk down the valley, up another hill to get water, and then walk up the hill, down the valley, back up to their place. It was an all-day procedure to get water to this side of the city. So this really made a huge difference. Plus, it made it a little more secure for the Assyrian invasion that they knew they were going to face themselves with Sennacherib and that group coming later. That was actually 701 B.C. Okay, that is kind of a layout of the city, and you can see that in your books, and you can see it on the chart right here behind me, something like this, the layout. We'll mention this too, because of the Kidron Valley, the Hinnom Valley, this was naturally protected because the valleys were hard to get over and attack up. They'd always attack from the north if the city was ever attacked, and that's why the fortress was always on the north side of the city. Okay, now we look at this right here. We'll just go with this chart. This is the modern city today. If you fly in today, you go see the old city of Jerusalem. Now realize Jerusalem, of course, is a larger city than right here. We talked about how many people live in here. It's not a lot of people living in the old city. But this is the walls that were built in the 1500s. The Muslims built the walls that you see today were built to keep the Crusaders out, the Christians out, because they'd taken the city earlier. And other invasions that we're going to see tonight, the Muslims from Turkey would take the city, and then the Muslims from Egypt would attack and eventually take control of the city. So the Muslims were fighting back and forth also, plus there's invaders and different things. So these walls were originally built around the time of the Crusades, or right after the Crusades, around the 1530s or so. Okay, but look down here. This is the original city of David. This is what we're talking about at the bottom of Mount Moriah right down here. Here's Mount Moriah. This is not inside the walls. So the city that David took, the city of the Jebusites, is outside the walls right here. So it's a little confusing when we talk about the walls of Hezekiah's day and the walls today. Some of them are the same. This line of walls right here is very similar to what it was in Herod's day. This line of the wall right here is very similar. In fact, this is probably the Golden Gate location of Solomon's day. I'll tell you this very quickly. Something exciting that had happened, I think it was 1967. The guy's name was Fleming. And I know Carl Rapson, we had his poster up here. And if we go to Jerusalem, he may be the one teaching the class. It's one of his friends. Fleming is his name. 1967, he was going to the same school that some of us will get to go to out here on Mount Zion, called the Jerusalem College University, University College. It was called a Biblical Institute of Studies or something at that time. But anyway, he was taking a class. There's a student, went out one night and was looking around this eastern wall right here. And there's a bunch of Muslim graves right up against the Eastern Wall, trying to make sure no Jewish person comes in and becomes the Messiah. So I'm trying to make them unclean. On the side of the Kidron, or other side of the Kidron Valley on the Mount of Olives, there's a bunch of Jewish graves. Everybody's waiting for the resurrection. The Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians are waiting for the Kidron Valley, for the Messiah, for Jesus, for the Christ to return and have the judgment. Everybody pretty much agrees that's what's going to happen. Well, anyway, he was out here looking, and he slipped into a grave. Now, as the story goes, this is how it happens. He slipped into a grave and was standing on bones, because they bury on top of each other. And he was down in front of this gate, but when he got down there, he was looking at the wall that's under the wall. You understand how things are built on top of each other? He was looking, and he snapped a couple pictures. He does have the pictures. You can look at them online. I've got a link to them in the book here. And you can see, this is a rough drawing. You can hear it's very high, but like a gate will have something like stones like this, keystones kind of coming together to hold the gate up. You understand what I'm talking about? This was the ground level. He got a picture of this right here, and he saw. Now, remember, here's the ground level today, and here's the eastern gate that's walled shut today that we can go see it. Picture it in the book. You can walk up and touch it if you hurry. Otherwise, security come get you. I know. And but anyway, this is underneath, and he snapped a picture of it. Now, obviously, it looks like there's something here. And this would date back to at least the days of Herod and maybe even before. This could be Solomon's actual gate. Now, again, that's almost like 100% true. That's not a legend. That's not like I heard somebody said somebody. I mean, you can find this photograph. It's documented in Biblical Archaeology Review. And I know people that know the guy that, you know, they're friends. Okay? So anyway, that's kind of exciting there about that eastern gate. Now, the whole reason I'm saying that is this wall has pretty much remained the same. I mean, it's had to be built up a couple times, but it follows the same line. Anyway, this wall that you see today, it's got the eight gates, the eastern gate right here called the Golden Gate, the Lion's Gate on the east side, Herod's, Damascus, and the New Gate. This was cut in the wall around 1800 to help the Christians coming out of the new part of the city have access to the Christian quarter. They just, you know, just needed more. They had to go down to the Joppa Gate. It's just quicker for them just coming here. So they just cut a hole in the wall and made a gate. Not a very nice gate. Nothing. It's a hole in the wall compared to the Damascus Gate, which is a very beautiful structured gate. Coming down this side, there's one gate on the west side, the Joppa Gate, the western gate. Then on the south side, the Zion Gate and the Dung Gate. You can enter the city there. You can drive cars into here. If you watch the video from last week, I put a couple video clips in of cars coming in, trying. It's a long process. They got to go back, and make the corner because the gates are, many of these gates were originally, for example, the Zion Gate. Here's the wall. You enter the gate like this. You see? You have to come in and turn. And it was designed, the Joppa Gate is still like that. The Zion Gate is still like that. The Lion's Gate was originally like that, but to make it easier, they just knocked this wall out so you just drive straight in. Otherwise, you got to back up before, you know, it's not designed for cars, but yet they use them for cars. Okay, that's the modern city. And the city's got four quarters, the Christian quarter with the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Muslim quarter over here, the Jewish quarter, and the Armenian quarter. And again, like we said, there's no boundaries. There's just kind of a street. You just kind of know what neighborhood you should live in. And people, you can walk around there. You're not going to, you know, get in trouble necessarily. But you do have, you know, a kind of a general idea of where you should be. Remember, the whole city today is controlled by Israel. Israel controls this. They control the whole city. They even have police forces over in the Muslim quarter. But the Muslims have that. The Jews do not control the Temple Mount. That was given back to the Muslims in 67 after the Jews took the city from Jordan. In 1967, Israel took this eastern city from Jordan, and they gave the Temple Mount back to them. And again, that's another topic of why, how come, why didn't you just keep it? And probably political pressure. Just so you see, when you talk about the Western Wall, the prayer wall, that is right here. It's the part of the retaining wall. We may get a chance to talk about that. Nonetheless, are there any questions at that time? That is a basic review of some things. Okay, what I'd like to have you do is go to page 17 on your books. I'm going to try to show you a history of the city of Jerusalem in a fast, convenient way, something understandable, to kind of understand where and how things have happened. Here's what we have on these charts right here. We're going to go through it in a little more detail, but I'll do a quick run through like this. From basic layout, these are different time periods or ages that people date the history at. From 4,500 BC to 3,300 BC, you've got the Chalcolithic period. Abraham, that would be, in the biblical time, that would be Shem, that would be the days of, well, that would be way before Moses, way before Abraham, going back to the very early days. Again, a lot of discussion about how old the earth is. I like to stick with the biblical record and think that eventually science is going to catch up. But again, we'll talk about that as we go. The Bronze Age, 3,300 to 1,200 BC. This is going to include 2,000 BC, Abraham. It's going to include Moses around 1,400 BC up to 1,200 BC. Now you're into the time of Judges. 1,200 to 539 BC. That's going to pick up the time of Judges all the way up through all of the kings until the time of the Persians. That's the Iron Age. Up until the Persians. 539 to 332 is going to be the Persian Age. Again, they're getting a little shorter because this is the time the Persians ruled. Alexander the Great shows up, and you've got the Hellenistic. Hellenistic, people, what does that mean? You think of the word, or the lady Helen, beautiful Helen of the Greeks, the Trojan War, the War of Troy. And that's Helen. That's kind of where Greek. It means Greek. And so the Hellenistic period, nothing to do with hell, burning fire. It's more about the beautiful woman Helen than it is about hell. 332 to 141, that's when Alexander came. And by 141, you've gone through the Maccabean revolt with Judas Maccabeus, and they've thrown off the power of the Seleucids, because that's when you get the power, the problem with the Ptolemy and the Seleucids. Daniel chapter 11, we went through that in Bible school. And by 141, the descendants of the Maccabees become known as the Hasmoneans, and the Maccabees, which are a priestly line of Jews, they take over and they begin to rule as kings of the Hasmonean age. That continues up until 37 BC, when by that time, the brothers of the Hasmonean party, they've formed somehow, they divided into the Democrats and the Republicans. And so now they're fighting for position. There's two kings, and they're trying to fight for power. And one of them becomes known as the Sadducees, they're the liberals, and the Pharisees, they're the conservatives. You can do your own political justice there, decide what you want to do. And they began fighting with each other, I mean killing each other, including crucifying each other. They began to slaughter each other, Jews slaughtering Jews on crosses in revolts and civil war. And the Hasmoneans now need help because their culture is collapsing in on itself. And there's people from the West that are more than willing to help out. They're the Romans. They're just coming into power. So in 37 BC, Pompey, or there's actually 63 BC, but around by 37, Rome controls Jerusalem, and they put a guy in charge named Antipater. Antipater is an Edomite. He's from where we'd say south of the Dead Sea, which would be like, you know, Saudi Arabia today, but he's an Edomite. His son is Herod the Great. Antipater begins to rule and reign. His son Herod becomes the governor of Galilee. Antipater gets poisoned. Herod ends up taking over. He's appointed as king of Jerusalem by Mark Antony right before the civil war between Octavian and Mark Antony. And so Herod and Mark Antony are friends, except Octavian, who's going to become Julius Caesar, wins the civil war, and now Herod's side lost. So Herod's now got to do some political jockeying to preserve himself as the king of Judah, and he becomes the king, and it begins the Herodian age, the age of Herod. This is the age of tremendous buildings. There's hundreds of Herodian stones designed and cut from that time period. You can see them. Look at some pictures tonight if we hurry, and you could walk in there and you'll be able to identify. This is a Herodian stone. The cut stone is the way they cut them. Very precise. They didn't throw things together. Hasmoneans kind of threw things together because they're in the middle of a war. Herod had peace, and he took his time and built some very nice things. Well, Herod, in 70 AD, of course, Herod is gone. He's got his fourth generation. They're recorded Herod Agrippa I, Herod Agrippa II. They're in the book of Acts. They eventually lose control of the Jews. The Jews revolt against Rome in 66 AD, which is a ridiculous idea. And they get stomped, although it takes about 4 years. And Jerusalem falls in 70 AD. Thus, Israel is done, dispersed, and scattered in 70 AD. They make another run at it in 135 AD with another revolt. But it doesn't really change the time period because Rome began to control Jerusalem from 70, up until 638. This is from 70 AD to 324 AD. is the pagan Rome. That's when Rome began to rule and reign. The Caesars are ruling. We can talk about many things there, and we will. But in 324, a guy becomes emperor named Constantine, or he comes 312, he becomes emperor. But in 324, it now becomes, he Christianizes the Roman Empire. Christianity has done a magnificent job. From 30 AD up until 324, they have now taken over the Roman Empire just by evangelizing and people just getting into power. And so you have, in 324, you now have, it's still Rome controlling Jerusalem and the kingdom, but it's called the Byzantine because it is Christian. They're Christianized. So this is really 324 to 324 here. The emperor's the same. It's just it went from a pagan empire, and Constantine says it's now Christian. Christianity is legal. In fact, Christianity is preferred, and it's going to lead to some persecution of the pagans. And you now have, from 324 to 638, you have your chance as Christians. You know, well, if the Christians just had a chance, well, you've already had your chance. You ruled the Roman Empire from 324 to 638. You controlled Jerusalem. You built churches. You made monuments everywhere. There's crosses. You found all these holy sites. You even found the original cross. You even found four or five of the original crosses. It was a fantastic job of Christianizing Jerusalem. And of course, I say that facetiously. But again, they did, and we'll talk about that. They did seriously Christianize it. A lot of things became very, you know, superstitious, but they did Christianize it. 638, there's a group that has now risen up out of the Saudi Arabia, the peninsula, the Arabian Peninsula. They began to destroy and conquer from Mecca, Medina. Their whole idea was to conquer with the sword. If you didn't submit, they killed you, they cut your throat, and they took your land. And nothing's changed. Do not be deceived. Nothing's changed. It's the same book, same religion, same ideas that they had back there, and it's the same going right now. They just had to play a little more of a political game until they get in control. So from 638 to 1099 was the first Muslim control of Jerusalem. So they controlled it from 638 to 1099. They came in and took control of Jerusalem, drove the Christians out and took control. Well, by 1099, the Roman Catholic Church realizes what the problem is. The problem is we need to control the Holy Land. We need to control the Holy City. How can God be pleased? He's ascended into heaven. He's seated at the right hand of God, and he looks down at the church, and we're letting the pagans control the Holy Land. God wants us to conquer Jerusalem so he can set up his kingdom. So the Crusades, yay, everybody got fired up. They march off time after time after time, and they did take the holy city, Jerusalem, in 1099 and controlled it from 1099 to 1187, slaughtered the Muslims, slaughtered the pagan Jews, and tried to Christianize again Jerusalem. So the Crusaders controlled Jerusalem. There's remains of Crusader buildings there to 1187, a lot cruder than, for example, Herodian stones. So again, things did not necessarily get better with time. Things in as far as building was really the golden age was the Herodian age. That's one way of looking at it. Well, of course, they're right in the middle of Muslim territory, so the Muslims aren't going to let them just have it easily. So they come back in 1187 to 1250. The Ayyubid Muslims from Turkey control Jerusalem. But not to be outdone, from Egypt, the Mamluk from 1250 to 1516 control Jerusalem. They drove the other Muslims out, so now the Muslims are fighting. Then from 1517 to 1917, out of Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. And many of you, if you think back in history, at some point you've heard of the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was a long, great reign of Muslims in Jerusalem. Again, when we think Muslims, we don't always have to think that they're terrible, terrible people. I don't agree with their religion, don't agree with their tactics. But it was, in a sense, one of the great, great empires of time. And they had some great leaders, some very merciful leaders. Suleiman the Magnificent, he is going to build walls because the Mamluks tore down all the walls of Jerusalem. So it was just an open city. In 1570, during this time, around 1530 actually, Suleiman the Magnificent, Suleiman the Great, built the walls up to protect it from other Muslims and from Crusaders, and we mentioned that already. That's what you see there today. In 1917, you've got World War I taking place and all these things, the political fallout of that. Ottomans end up going with the wrong side. They lose their control, and Britain takes over the control of Jerusalem and the Middle East, or the land of Israel, called Palestine. Now, I would just say this very quickly. You do know the land of Palestine. I've made comments on the internet before, and people come on and blast me. It's not called Israel. It's really Palestine. And, of course, that's all political. That's going way back to to the Roman time period. Do you understand Palestine? Do you understand Palestine? Anybody understand Palestine? The land of Israel is called Palestine. Even on maps, it's called Palestine. The Romans, because, again, and you can't blame the Romans. Again, it's history. It's like everybody's trying to fight and protect their ideas. The Jews became so obstinate, and they revolted in 66 A.D. They were completely wiped out, pretty much. Obviously not completely, but by 135, they're strong enough to have another Jewish revolt. And by that time, Rome is just tired of it. And so they tried to sell them into slavery, tried to kill them, bulldozed the place, and built a Roman city called Aulia Capitolina on top of Jerusalem. It's the Byzantine Empire, Byzantine city. They built the Cardo we talked about, the Cardo North-South Street. I think I said last week the Northwest Street. I would listen to the video. The Northwest Street. And everybody just sat there and wrote it down. It's like, no, not the North, the North-South Street called the Cardo. Then there's an East-West Street. But they tried to wipe them out. And one of the things they did politically, they stopped calling it Israel. They started calling it after the ancient enemy of the Jews, Philistines. They gave the land. They tried to rewrite history. This is history from 135. They tried to rewrite history. We're not even going to mention the name of those people. That land is, it's the land of the Philistines. It's Philistia, or Palestine is how we translate it now. And so when you say Palestine, that is an attempt by the Romans to wipe out the Jews, the memory of the Jews, they never existed. So it's funny when people come out and say, that really belongs to the Palestinians. Do you understand what a Palestinian is? They're living in a land that was Israel's land that was renamed after the Philistines, and now you call them Palestinians, and it's like you are so confused on your history that you are just living in modern-day politics. So let's just step back and let the Bible take place, because there is prophecy waiting to happen, and we'll all find out in the end who's right. I'm just going to wait and see. But anyway, do not freak out when you hear the word Palestine. A lot of people, they want to argue that, but they really don't know where it came from. And that's that story right there. And again, that's me telling the story. So there is a political slant and a Christian view to that, so that needs to be taken care of. Okay, anyway, from 1917 up until the present, it has been controlled. It's called the modern age. Okay, that is an overview of the history. Now we're going to look, please, a little more detail on page 17 of your books. Now that these things are kind of familiar, at least we've got them broken down, here we go. The Chalcolithic period from 3500, Jerusalem was first settled around 3500 B.C. and settled on the Ophel above the Gihon Springs. Now again, you know what the Ophel is. Here's the city of David, Kidron Valley. Here's the Gihon Springs. This is the Ophel right here. This is Mount Moriah right there. It's kind of that land between the city of David and the Temple Mount. It's called the Ophel. 3500 B.C. is people settled there. And the reason they settled, good protection and the Gihon water springs. That's where it settled. Bronze Age, 3300 to 1200 B.C. 2000 B.C., Abraham meets with Melchizedek, the king of Jerusalem. And he is the king of Jerusalem. He's a priest of God Most High. The God you worship, the Christian God, Melchizedek was a priest for him on Mount Moriah in Salem or in Jerusalem. And Melchizedek was met by Abraham coming back from the defeat of the king, the Chedorlaomer, and he took his son Isaac to offer him right here. So this goes, the God, the Christian God goes way back to the days of Melchizedek, because he was, it says right in the Bible, the priest of God Most High, and that's not Allah or Buddha. 1800, Jerusalem is mentioned in Egyptian texts and called Rosh Eliamim. Again, I can't pronounce that word. But if you look right here, there's a photograph of one of the stones, and it's written in cuneiform, which is the language that comes from Sumer, which is over by Euphrates River, the Tigris River, Mesopotamia. And so the cuneiform writing looks like little wedges or little trumpets. And in that, they were sending letters. The Pharaoh of Egypt was sending letters to his king or representative here in Jerusalem around that time. And we have found, and just recently, they have found another one of these. They found them in both locations where they've read these letters, have been the letters that they sent and the letters that they received. So again, Jerusalem by this time was an important city, 1400 B.C. or 1800 B.C. Now, I just mentioned this very quickly because it's kind of interesting. In 1400 B.C., Joshua kills Adonai Zedek. Now, do notice this. Melchizedek, Z-E-D-E-K from Genesis. By you come 600 years down, the king of Jerusalem is still named Zedek at the end of it. Okay, it's in the biblical text. the Jebusite king. He comes out of the city to fight with Joshua and is killed in battle, but the city of Jerusalem is not taken at the time. What I wanted to tell you that is interesting, so some of these letters, these cuneiform letters, are talking about a group of people, and they're sending letters to Egypt around this time, 1400 B.C. We're being invaded. They're asking for help. They're called the word that they use, it's a word that sounds like, it's like Hebrew or something like this. The word means nomad, the wanderers. We're being invaded by the wanderers, and we need help. They're taking our cities, and they're desperate. They're trapped in cities. Sometimes they're walled into the city, and they can't get out, and they need help because we're being invaded. Now, you know what that is. I mean, historically, the people that don't want to believe the Bible is not historically accurate do not want to accept it, but it's lined up perfectly. The terminology, the warfare, the time period, everything is these are people, the Canaanites, pleading for help from the Pharaoh of Egypt to come help us. We're being invaded by the Hebrews. Joshua's tearing up our cities. And that's kind of interesting that that's documented in these clay tablets. 1400 B.C., Jerusalem appears. Oh, there it is. Diplomatic correspondence called the you can look that up on the internet if you'd like to. The Amarna letters as Jerusalem. You see how it's spelled at that time in those letters. It shows up at that time in 1400, Jerusalem. The Iron Age, 1000 B.C., David takes the city. We've got to talk about that story yet, but he uses the Gihon Springs because in the Gihon Springs, oh goodness, should I tell you this story? Go in your books, please. Let's see if we can find this quickly. You don't know where to go in your books because I don't know where to tell you to go. We're looking for the Gihon Springs. Gihon Springs. Okay, I'm too far. See, we're getting close right there. There you go. You're right. 66, 67. What we want to do is look at the picture on page 67. I'll tell you the story quickly. You know the story. David is going to take Jerusalem. He's been named king of Judah. He's been king for about 7 years. His capital is Hebron in the hill country of Judah down here. Here's the Galilee, Dead Sea is down here, Jordan River. Here is, outside of the land of Judah, is a city called Jerusalem. Here's all the other land of Israel. David is king for about 7 years of Judah. Ishbosheth is killed, Saul's son, and the people of Israel, they come down and they say, we would like you to be our king also. So David wants to find a political balance. They don't want really a king in Hebron ruling them. It may last for a week, but it's going to become a political problem. So he wants a neutral city. He's decided he wants Jerusalem. He's talked about it. In fact, the Bible says he buried Goliath's head there. You know that, right? He cut Goliath's head off. It'd be south of Bethlehem, is about 5-6 miles south. Over here is the valley that he killed him in. So right around, he's about 6 miles, 7 miles from Jerusalem. He kills Goliath. It says he cut his head off, right? It says that. It then says he buried the head in Jerusalem. Went to the Jebusite city. I'm not sure if he stood out underneath the walls, held the wall, said, I'll be back, and buried Goliath's head there in Jerusalem as, I don't know, a sign, a seed. David just kind of morbid that way. I'm not sure. But he buried it. Anyway, at this time, he comes to the city, and the Jebusites, as we've talked about, they look down at Joab, the general, and David, and they says, what are you doing? Joshua couldn't take our city. They didn't say that, but that's historical. No one's been able to take Jerusalem. You've killed our king, but you can never take our city. And they said, you know, only if it was only the blind and the lame, we could defend the city. And truthfully, and we've looked at photos, the steep ravines around the city, all they had to do is defend the northern wall, and David's not getting in. So David looked at Job and says, if anyone's going to take the city, they're going to have to use the water source. So David maybe found out as a child, maybe he'd heard about it, but the people have a water source out here called the Gihon Springs. And you never see the people come out of the city to get the water, because we've been sitting here watching for 3 weeks. They never come out of the city. So somehow they're getting that water into the city through a plumbing system. And I suggest someone figure out where it's at. And so if you look right here I look kind of funny there on video, I bet. Page 67, atop left, you've got the Gihon Springs there in the bottom of the Kidron Valley. To the left there is you're going up that eastern ridge up into the city of David right there. Are you with me on that? Can you understand that? If you go to the right, what would be to the right of the Gihon Springs? The Mount of Olives would be on the right side. Okay, has everybody kind of got an idea of where we're at? So what happened, and you can see it today, for where it says Hezekiah's tunnel, that was not there at that time. But the water source did come in, and what they've even found, you can see today, there's a ground surface up there inside the city. You kind of see the wall of the city, the Jebusite wall there inside the city. They'd have a staircase that they'd just go down the stairs, follow a tunnel down to a certain, they walk that slanted tunnel down, that slanted shaft. You see how it goes kind of like a slant? Then it goes straight down vertically. What they would do is they take a bucket, and they put a bucket in water, and they just lower it down like this, get a bucket of water, bring it back up, walk back up the slope, hit the stairs, and come back out in the city street. And the Gihon Springs supplied them with water. And David says, if anyone's going to get in here, you're going to have to use the water system. And Joab, then, it's kind of like the Trojan horse in the city of Troy. Joab goes through that tunnel, shimmies up. You can just imagine a couple of those Israelite guys trying to crawl up that couple guys getting up, they're dropping a rope down. They sneaking up. They walked up the shaft, hit the stairs, took a couple look out in the streets. They attacked. A couple guys, you know, it's like a SEAL Team 6 or something. A couple guys are defending off the attack. A bunch of guys headed for the gate, opened the gate up, and come on in. And David took the city. And it happened right there in the Gihon Springs. And that's recorded biblically that is how Joab did it. And you can go look at it today. And you can see some of the remains there. You can read through that, some of those pictures and stuff there. If you look on the page 66, you can see the city of David there and the Gihon Springs. And, of course, there's fortresses. The towers, if you look on page 66 and you see the Gihon Springs and the towers, there's four towers protecting the city or protecting the Gihon Springs. If you look over on the bottom of page 67, what you're looking at right there is the base of those towers, the remains of those towers. And that's continually being, go to page 68 now that we're talking about it. Page 68, the top left, you can see the remains of those towers. You can even see kind of like an aqueduct there on page 68 that you could walk in or water could run in between the stacks of stones. And then there's two artist interpretations of how it would have looked. One was hanging there on the wall in 2007 when we were there, so I took a photograph of it. That's on the bottom, the left side there in the middle. When I went back in 2010, that picture was gone, and they'd had a new artist rendering of what they thought it looked like. As archaeological evidence comes forth, they begin to redesign kind of what they think it looks like. So both of those are just drawings of what they think it looked like based on what they have found. And, of course, they're still excavating. Anyway, that's Hezekiah's tunnel and everything right there. Okay, let's go back to page 17, if you don't mind. Are there questions at all at this point? Yes, sir. Okay, let me explain that. I get talking pretty fast, and I border between being afraid that I'm boring you completely silly and talking too fast. Here it is. Here's the Gihon Springs, Mount of Olives, coming up here. Here comes the city of David coming up out of the Kidron Valley. We already saw right here the rock formation, the terraces called the Milo, the Jebusites had built. And up on top of this is going to be the wall of the city. You got to imagine that wall goes all the way around the city. Now, the water comes in here like this, and they just tunneled it in. They also tunneled from the Gihon Springs. They tunneled it down the Kidron Valley, down south, where they called the King's Valley in Rogel, probably where Melchizedek and Abraham met when he came back after the battle, gave him a tithe. It's down there where in Melchizedek's garden. It's a beautiful place. But they also cut in the rock a channel for the water to run in. There was a natural, it appears to be a natural just crack or hole, what would you call that, shaft in the rock right here. And they figured this out. What they did, and again, everyone would have used this, they had steps coming down like this. And then there was a natural kind of a, again, that's too steep here for our illustration, but a natural kind of a walk where there's a slope, ramp, that they'd come down the steps, they'd stand right here. Here's the person with a bucket of water with a rope. They lower the bucket down, get a bucket of water, and pull it up and walk back up into the city. And that's how they, see, they're inside the walls. And David and Joab are standing out here going, they're saying, you can't get us. You can't get us. It's like, well, no, you got to run up here, knock over the wall, get in the city. David says, no, we can't. Let's just go in here. So they shimmied up here. Joab did. Walked up here. And then SEAL Team 6 kicked open the door, had some. After. Right. This is 1000 B.C. And all the way from 1000 B.C. to 700 B.C., this is one of the major supplies of water for Jerusalem. All the kings, David, Solomon, everybody would have used this. Hezekiah realized that we got to get water to the other side of this ridge because the people are coming down. The city's expanding to the west. So he cuts this tunnel. He just keeps right on going. He cut it right to the bedrock. Again, this is rock. And when he walks, it's just you can see pick marks. You can see all the pick marks. They start on both ends. They started on this side. Okay, you want to see Hezekiah's tunnel. Okay, does that answer your question? Okay. No. Let's go find Hezekiah's tunnel. I don't know. Yeah. Hezekiah's tunnel. Go to Hezekiah's tunnel. Go to page 85. And now what you're going to find here is this tunnel. I'm trying to find exactly some numbers here. I know I put it in here somewhere. I'm just looking at it quick. This is as long as a football field, I think. I think it's like 300 feet. You guys see on there somewhere the number, how long this is? On page 85, what you see, you can see Tony on the top of the page. We're getting ready to step out of the Gihon Springs into Hezekiah's actual tunnel. And now on the bottom of page 85, you can see our flashlights. It's dark. I mean, it is dark. It's rock. You're in the middle of a rock getting ready to walk at least the distance of a football field. What top of what? Oh, right there. Oh, I thought that was a date. 1,750 feet. Okay, so that's 3 football fields, right? No, wait, 1,700 feet. 1,750, 300, wait, 100 yards, that'd be 300 feet. So divide 300 into that. Oh, my gosh, that's more than, how what is that? That's like, yeah, that's 5.5 football fields, and it weaves. I don't know that. But I would assume it was public access. They might have had servants, slaves doing it. It might have just been, you know, a time you just walk down and get your bucket of water or something. Again, and so how they did it, you know, I don't know. But again, it appears that's the system they are working with. That's where their water source came from. Yeah. Yes, that's what's cool. You're walking in water. Yep. And it depends on the season. Because sometimes we've gone through, it's been as high as up to here. A couple of times, I've been there twice. The other time it's down to our ankles. By the way, you can see the water in the bottom of that bottom picture on page 85. We're walking, you see our flashlights on the side of the wall there. You can see how it's cut. You see it's about this wide, and you see how tall it is. And it's they started on both sides. What I'm trying to tell you, we'll go look at those pictures here in a minute. Go to page 90. 90 is a good page, 90 and 91. 90 is the actual schematic drawing of Hezekiah's tunnel. Now, your first question is going to be, why didn't they cut it straight? That's everybody's question, because it's like twice as long as it needs to be because of it curving around. They don't even know for sure how they cut it, but they do know for sure that they started on the bottom side where the Pool of Siloam is, and they started cutting, and they started at the top of the Pool of the Gihon Springs, and they started cutting, and they met. Cutting through rock, they met in 700 B.C. In fact, there's an inscription. Go back. I got several things I'm trying to tell you here. Go back to page 88 at the top. Tony is pointing. This is sad. But Tony is pointing at a hole in the wall where it's been cut out, where a Hebrew inscription with ancient Hebrew writing in it used to be, and they found that in 1880. Because they, again, I got several stories I'm thinking of here. But they found that in 1880, and of course the Muslims, just like you know Americans would have done, they chipped it out. And they took it to it's in Turkey today in a museum. And you can see that in the museum in Turkey. And Israel still wants it back. But a simulation of it is on the bottom of page 88 on the left there. An imitation of the actual stone and the inscription that was removed and taken to the museum in Istanbul, Turkey. That is what it says. And on that, if you don't mind me reading it to you, I'm not going to read the Hebrew, I'm going to read the text right above it. This is what it says on that. They found this in 1880. In the middle of Hezekiah, not in the middle, I'll show you where it's at. It's towards the end of Hezekiah's tunnel. It says, when the tunnel was driven through, and this was the way in which it was cut through, while something were still something, axes, each man towards his fellow, and while there were still 3 cubits to be through, there was heard the voice of a man calling to his fellow. So they're talking about, we're cutting, and we can hear the voice of about 3 cubits away, of a voice coming through the rock that we're getting close. We can hear each other. Calling to his fellows, for there was an overlap in the rock on the right and on the left,
And when the tunnel was driven through, they met each other. The quarrymen hewed the rock, each man toward his fellow. I mean, I'm cutting towards this guy. He's cutting towards me. And all of a sudden, he's like, hey, we can see each other. Axe against axe, and the water flowed from the spring, the Gihon spring, towards the reservoir, the Pool of Siloam, for 1,200 cubits. So if 1,700 doesn't make any sense, 1,200 cubits. And the height of the rock above the heads of the quarrymen was 100 cubits. So they're under, in their sense, 100 feet of rock. Siloam inscription engraved in 701 B.C. And of course, that's not, they didn't write that. That's what I put in there. So that describes how they met each other. Now go back to page 90. And if, right. No, and no, and it's good. That this is one of the engineer mysteries. In fact, not I'll just tell you because it's kind of neat. But I got an email from an individual in Spain who's an engineer writing a book on engineering, and he wanted to use my photos. I don't know why he didn't use anybody else's, but he wanted to use my photos for his book because he's writing on engineering. And one of the things they were discussing in his book, and he's not a Christian necessarily, just writing on ancient engineering, is how they did this. And so there's all kinds of theories. One theory is that there was a natural crack, and that water was seeping, you know, and they just kept following that crack. And if you start on this side and this side, and eventually you just follow that crack and you'd meet. That's one theory. Another theory is the tap theory, that up on top they'd follow some kind of a path up on top, and a guy was hitting with a tapper, like an iron rod, tap, 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 and it'd echo, and they could hear that, and they would continue to follow. What is also interesting is as you go through this, and again, we're in a discussion now that engineers and Bible scholars try to figure out. They don't really know. They've got ideas. They don't know. There's a couple places where they have dead ends. Well, they'll be cutting. It's like they go, all of a sudden, they just stop, and they continue to come back this way. So how did they know they were going the wrong direction? I mean, did they have their map upside down, or did they hear something wrong? Did the guy take a break and another guy came back? Hey, I got some. He's going the wrong way. He's going, what is that story? We don't know. It's just that there's some dead ends shot in there. If you look on page 90 and at number 11, where it says 11 on that little snake trail of the Hezekiah's tunnel, that is where the Siloam inscription is found. It's towards the end when you first come out of the Hezekiah's tunnel. You can see all those other details. You can read through those right there. 6, 7, and 8, there's a point of meeting of two construction teams. At point 6 right there is where those two teams met. Now, again, they didn't put the inscription there. They put it towards the other end so it'd be more visible for the public. But they meet at point 6 right there. Now, how we know that's where they met, and again, I've tried to see it, figure it out myself, but you can tell the pick marks. The pick marks, because they're swinging this way, and the stone's breaking off, and then at that point, the pick marks switch directions. They're just little dips, and you can just feel them. You can see some in the pictures there, especially if you go online and look at the pictures. You can see the little dips where the picks just picked out little chunks of rock. Now the question comes up. I mean, I'm going through there, thinking this is a long ways to walk. And Tony and I were doing it by ourselves. We went down there one Sunday morning, got our flashlights, and we just, you know, turned the flashlight on, look in it, and it's just pitch dark until you get a flash in it. And there's water running. It's like, let's do it. We started walking. And you just walk through there with your flashlight. And you get in there and you start thinking about a construction crew. Man, they built this. They chipped this out in 700 B.C. They start thinking, I mean, Tony, I turn around and talk to Tony like this, you know. And it's like, and there's like these guys are swinging picks. And it's like, and now if you dug a hole before, what's the biggest problem with digging a hole with a shovel is the dirt falls back in the hole. And so now these guys are picking these. Who's taking the rock out? I mean, so there's got to be just one or two guys picking, and everybody else is taking rock out as they work this thing through there. So, I mean, there's all kinds of, as someone that's done construction, or, you know, everybody would think something like this, how are they doing this whole project? And a lot of these things are very interesting. In point 8 and point 9, you can see those are false tunnels where they start shooting off somewhere else. And again, they don't even meet at a straight point. They're both almost going off course to meet each other. So how they knew that? And if they are doing the tap method, why don't you cut it straight? I mean, you could cut down on the production time. And so these are just ideas that people have thrown out. Yeah. We don't know. No. I mean, people can make guesses and stuff, but that's Hezekiah's tunnel. Now, while we're going down this road, if you don't mind, look at number 12. You see the 12 right there? Up until 2001, was it 2001? I'm going to think it's 2001. It might have been 2007. It might have been 2007 or 2006. I don't know. But it was right during that time period, they discovered the Pool of Siloam. Now, if you go home and you've got a set of Bible encyclopedias and you look up Pool of Siloam, you're not going to see the Pool of Siloam. For years, they've been calling number 12 right there the Pool of Siloam. And it's a waterway. So let's go, right there, go back to page 89. That if you go home in your Bible dictionaries or your Bible encyclopedies and look up Pool of Siloam, there, and I'm not, this is not because I'm a freak and I came up with something, I had a vision. This is now fact. This is history. This is archaeology. This is not me. It's just that it's just so recent. Most of your biblical or encyclopedias, they're going to show you a picture of 89 on page 89. That's a view. The first picture is a view from, I'm standing up on some steps looking down at it. And that water, Tony is just coming right out of Hezekiah's tunnel. See where she's standing right there? She has just emerged past the Siloam inscription out into the daylight. And there's what has been called the Pool of Siloam. That is really nothing more than a channel. That's just a continuation of Hezekiah's tunnel in the open. And then there's the next picture on page 89. I'm standing down there taking a picture of the Pool of Siloam, what has been called the Pool of Siloam. But again, it's just a water channel because the water continues to flow this way. I mean, it continues to flow. What are those pillars right there? Now, I'll tell you what those pillars are. Those pillars are from the Church of Siloam, built during the Byzantine time period. Now, we come back over here. During this time period, probably around, I can't even tell you for sure, it's in the book somewhere, but it'd be around 400 A.D. I can tell you it's going to be before 400 A.D. It's going to be probably around 370, 360, because I remembered something. But nonetheless, I think. But anyway, they built a church. Those are what has remained, the pillars of a church that was built over what they thought was the Pool of Siloam, because the water continued to flow, and they used that. That church was a church for healing, because that water was miraculous water, and they'd have all, that was probably somewhere at the front of the church, the water was flowing through, and you could have your service, and you could dip in the water, you could imagine all the kind of mystical things they were doing there with the magical water from the Gihon Springs flowing through the Church of Siloam there at the Pool of Siloam. Okay, and let's go back to page 90. We'll talk more about that when we get into the Byzantine time period. Yeah, it could be. It was from here to here, but it was. It's moving. It's moving. Yep, it's moving. The first guy, he's the editor of Biblical Archaeology Today. He's a famous. I mean, you everybody knows him. I forget his name, but he's the one that first discovered this, and went through it. Now this is freaky stuff. If you look at pictures, how did you guys walk through there? Well. It's been cleaned out. It's a tourist attraction. They keep it clean. They keep it organized, so it's nice. As nice as a tunnel can be. But the very first guy, doesn't matter. I can almost remember his name. He thought that this made a connection here. So by that time, it was filled in with dirt and soot and stuff. And there was only, in some places, there was only this much room. And the water was flowing through there. And he had to go through it on his back, floating in the water with a candle. He wanted to get through there so bad that, he's alive. Shanks. This has not that long ago. I mean, it's Herschel Shanks. Very good. He went through there, one of the first guys to go through there and found this. I mean, so anyway, it's, and they got it cleaned up. Another guy, I'm getting my stories mixed up here, but it's just recently. No. In fact, after the first time I went through this, I was, I'm just jazzed. This is really cool. You're walking through the Pool of Siloam, or walking through this water. You're all wet. You come out. I'm going to show you the Pool of Siloam here in a minute. We walked, saw this water. We went on down. We found the Pool of Siloam. The water's still running. It runs right past the Pool of Siloam. And outside, I thought, well, where'd this go? So I went out, and look, we leave the Pool of Siloam. We go up around some stairs, and there's a gutter. Go down, there's some trash and old pop cans. It goes right down to the gutter, and it's gone. It's kind of like, I took a picture of it, kind of an anticlimactic end of my story. So much for the power of the healing waters of the Pool of Siloam. But anyway, yeah, that's where that water goes. Let's go back and look at these pictures very quickly on page 85 and walk through this. There's Tony going on page 85. She's getting ready to go in. She's right at the Gion Springs. The bottom of the page, we got the flashlights. We're walking through. You can see the water in the bottom there. And it's been cleaned out, so you can walk. A lot of times you can walk standing straight up. There's a couple times you have to crouch. But as you get, another thing that's important, I was going to say about the engineering of it, is the water, it has to flow downhill. Yeah, now, Matt, I mean, it's got to, from the starting point to the end, it's got a very gradual flow downhill so the water keeps moving. And that's in here probably somewhere. How far, what is it, what does it say? Okay, it would have been 40% less. I have to read this. I didn't read this before I came in tonight, so I'm not ready. But the drop, it's not like feet that it drops. It's a matter of a few inches that it drops in that 700 feet. So it's very well engineered, just the gradual flow of water. So you know how a plumber, the basic rule is, water runs downhill, and that's what they do. So anyway, that water flows through there, but by the time you get to the end, the ceiling's like 14 feet high. So it's like 14 feet high towards the end. At the beginning, it's a little bit slower. By the end, it's 14 feet high. Okay, turn the page. We're on page 86. Now, I'm here, I'm trying to capture the wall a little bit on some of these photos. The bottom left, you can see the ceiling, and you can see very clearly how it's squared off on the ceiling there. And you can see some of the pick marks. If you kind of get a feel for the pick marks there, especially the bottom right photograph, you can kind of see both sides of the wall and that square top. And again, that's been picked out. No, now one of the disappointing things about this, to try and take away a little bit of the adventure, is that used to, if you went through there, well, but you go back to 2000, and Ryan Roush, he went there. He spent a semester there one time. He went through it back, I think it was 2001 or something. He went through, and it was dirt. It was a dirt floor, like rocks and dirt, and had to walk through it. By the time I got there in 2007, they've paved it. So you watch that's just concrete. It's nothing. I don't even want to tell you that because it kind of takes away from the adventure. It's like, so we walked through on a sidewalk through Hezekiah's tunnel. But yeah, that's just, and I think the coloration is there so you can see that make a distinction of the floor. The next page, you can see a couple other things there on the page. You see some turns there. Again, take a look at the wall. Notice the bottom right. Look how high it is on the bottom right photo. See how high the ceiling is right there, the tunnel? It's a lot further up to get the water to run downhill. Other things, you just see that. Okay, now, again, on page 89, there you've got the what is called the Pool of Siloam, but it's not the Pool of Siloam. Go to page 90, please. I hope you're all right with me just telling you what to do here. On page 90, again, find 11 and 12. 11 is where the inscription, the Shalom inscription, is at. On number 12, that is that channel that has been called the Pool of Siloam. But I think it was 2001, maybe it was 2006. They were doing some city work, some sewage work, some sewer work. And they're excavating, not to find any, but they had to run some new pipes. And as they're excavating, they hit an ancient pool. And that right there, on number 14, they hit for the first time within the last, it's only been 6 years ago, they found the Pool of Siloam. So up until 6 years ago, what they've said was the Pool of Siloam, even the Byzantine Empire did not know where the Pool of Siloam was. And it's pretty clear. Now I'm going to see if I can find the Pool of Siloam here. If you can find it before I can, probably the index would be the best way to do this. And I know we've talked about it before. Pool of Siloam. Go to page 176. Yeah, 171. Okay. Now on page 171, we've got a diagram of the Pool of Siloam. And it's a square, and it's got steps coming down. So there's several layers of steps. In fact, the picture on the left on page 171, I'm standing in one of the corners taking a photograph of part of the Pool of Siloam. Now understand this, that is somebody's backyard. That's not just somebody's backyard, that's a Palestinian's backyard in the city of Silwan, and they don't like the Jews being there. And now the Jews want to dig up the guy's backyard. This is not going to go well. Okay? The only reason we got this excavated was because the city was doing some work there, and they bumped into it. So here's what it looks like. I'm not sure if I got a picture of it here or not. But if you look at it right here, here's the Pool of Siloam. Here's Hezekiah's tunnel comes out over here. Here's that channel that they used to call the Pool of Siloam. The water continues to run, and it still runs right past here and then down into a drain. But right here, it's this stared pool so that no matter how deep the water is, you can walk, you just walk down and get it. But right now, this is still dirt. It was dirt in 2007. It was dirt in 2010. So you go, you look at it, you see it, then there's this big wall of dirt. What's that wall of dirt? That's somebody's backyard. And you look up on the top, there's grass, there's a grill up there. You don't know. But there's a pool on the other. This continues over here like this. But you can't just go in there and dig it up. It's political, it's religious, it's a lot of things going on, archaeology. Now, while I'm here, I'm going to talk about this some more, but while I'm here, right here, if you go over in this part right here, you come out over here, you see this, oh, it takes some pictures, and then you just keep walking right here, there's a little opening right here, and if you turn left, you're on some Herodian pavement from the days of Herod. And you're kind of behind this, you're kind of underneath this guy's backyard. It's kind of like, what are we doing? And then all of a sudden you turn, and you can see stairways, an ancient Herodian stairway going up like this, and you're on your way to the Temple Mount. This is the Siloam Road, come down the Pool of Siloam. Blind, we talked about this before. And eventually, as you walk on this, you lose the steps, and now you're underneath the road, and you're walking in the gutter, and that's what you can see on page 170, go back there. I'm walking in the gutter, going up to the Temple Mount in the gutter underneath the Siloam. And you can see, look on the top of there, you can see the pavement stones of the street of Siloam right there. And turn back one more page. There you can see I'm walking up those stairs. Those are Herodian stones. Part of it is the stairs. Some of those pictures are the gutter underneath the road. Okay, let's come back to page 171. And so now you can see this diagram right here on page 171. And that's kind of what I showed you. It's kind of a little bit different laid out right there. But what I'm showing you right there is where the pavement's at and where the stairs go north to the temple. And we can see Hezekiah's tunnel coming in to feed the Pool of Siloam. Now I'll turn the page. Here's some more pictures. On page 172, you can see the water channel. That water channel that you see on top of page 172 is right here. It's right here. And there's stones covering it. Still see the stones covering it? So you can actually walk on it. So it wasn't open to the public. And some of the stones have collapsed, obviously. Both those pictures are showing the stones covering Hezekiah's tunnel. Of course, Hezekiah's tunnel, we came out of it here. We walked past that channel. And now you're over here. It's out in the sunlight. It's wide open, but it's still covered up. But this is what was feeding the Pool of Siloam, the water from the Gihon Springs on the other side. This channel, no. That where Tony was standing, where I said it used to be a pool, that's wide open. That's, you can look right. Yep. 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 Yeah, exactly. That's those pictures. It's out in the sunlight. The Hezekiah's tunnel, maybe 40 minutes. Yep. And it all, you know, we were fortunate that we got there by ourselves. We went on a Sunday morning, and it just, we got there and did it. But another time we went through there, we're walking through there with a group, and then as we get there to the end, it's some kind of a youth group or something is ahead of us. And they're in no hurry. And so you're at the tunnel is blocked by a youth group having a water fight, and we're in the middle of Hezekiah's tunnel, and all of a sudden, the adventure is gone, and you realize you're in the tunnel in the middle of a rock, and there's no way out. And all of a sudden, you had to start talking to somebody about something else because you can start getting claustrophobic real quick. And so, yeah, that one time there's just a bunch of people. That slows you down. There's a youth group having a water party at the front of it. Yeah, I didn't know because when Tony and I went there, we went there and just went through. Yes, I think so. Yes. Yes, I think so, yeah. Yeah, because you... I don't think so. It's connected with the City of David archaeological project. And so I think we pay like $10 or 10 shekels or something. You get in, you can see the Jebusite wall, you can see some things. And then you get to see the Gihon Springs, and then you just keep walking until you find the tunnel and you walk through it. There's a gate to get into, yeah, you're right. Because if this was just left open, it would be terrorized. Because this proves when it says Hezekiah, we should look at the Bible verses, when it says Hezekiah made a channel or a tunnel, there it is. It kind of proves the Bible's true, and it proves the Jews were there doing this. Okay, we'll look at some of those verses. Maybe we should here. Man, I didn't get very far again tonight. On page 173, you've got that is this part right here again. That's just that water going past the Pool of Siloam. And then on the bottom of page 173, now I'm standing again in the other side taking a picture of those steps coming down. And you can see it's still not even excavated to the very bottom. See, all you're looking at is, in this case, just that left side. It's a whole square just like that, and it's got to be excavated yet. And this is just, this is, like I say, brand new. This, unless you buy a brand new set of books that have just been printed, this isn't in them. You go look at Pool of Siloam in your Bible encyclopedia, you're not even going to see this. They're going to call it something else. I guess. And again, I don't know, because you see it's dry today. The water, we walked through the water here, we saw the water here in that little channel, and we're seeing the water run through this right here, and I just know it continues and disappears over here. So somewhere in the Herodian time, it fed into here somehow, but it's not happening today. Maybe that's on purpose. I don't know, but it's not happening today. Look on page 173 also, and you can see those holes in the stone, those dips. That's for water pots. When they bring a water pot, and they'd set the water pot in there and fill it up with water, those are designed to hold those. You know, the water pots, they'd be small, and they'd come up like this. And then you set that part down in that hole, and then you'd fill up the water bottle right there, and then you'd pick it up and take it back to where you want it. So those are all over the Pool of Siloam there. Page 174, you've got a mural. That's a drawing that's right there on the wall showing you what it would have looked like, the Pool of Siloam. And that's, you know, there you can see the wall. That's a pretty good little picture. There appears to be a little drain. I'm not sure what this is. I just saw it there in the Herodian stones, bottom of page 174, since we're talking about it. I called it a drain, but that's just a guess. I don't know. But that's a little figure, and that's 2,000 years old, that little stone right there. That's something. And then there's a trough on page 174 on the bottom right where they apparently would sit their bottles or their jars in, fill them up with water. And then there's just some more pictures of the different steps there in the Pool of Siloam. Okay. Well, any questions at that point? I wonder if we want to go somewhere with that. Let's go back to page 17. Thank you, Supervisor. We got here, we made it all the way to 1000 BC, I think. We're still in the Iron Age. And that's where we were at, I believe. David takes the city on page 17, Iron Age, 1200 BC to 539. David takes Jerusalem from the Jebusites. And we talked about how he took that. We talked about the Gihon Springs, talked about how the Jebusites used it, how Joab used that water source of the Gihon Springs to get into the city. And now we've got to go to 960 BC starting next week. And we're going to have Solomon is going to expand the city. And just to give you give you something to look at here, kind of neat, see if you can figure this out. I'm looking for the Temple Mount. I just want to show you this, and we'll pick this up next week if I remember. I'm looking for Herod's Temple Mound. Page 110, Herod's Temple Mound. And now, on that diagram on page 110, I'm going to quit. I'm quitting. I'm wrapping this up. We're circling. We're looking at the runway. Page 110, if you look to the right of that picture going down the hill where it says Triple Gate and it says Ophel, you know where we're at, correct? This is pretty revealing right here. And this answers a lot of questions. Here is that eastern ridge, City of David, Gihon Springs, Hezekiah's Tunnel, Pool of Siloam, Ophel, right here, that space between these walls were knocked over and Solomon built up into here on Mount Moriah. And what he did, you see this right here. This is actually Herod's wall. I'm going to ask you to do this. Keep your place there. Go to page 76. And on page 76, if you can just imagine, just look at, on the top of page 76, that black line, that heavy black line on the wall around Mount Moriah. That is Solomon's Temple Mount wall. Do you understand what I'm saying right there? He's got... Someday people are just going to stop coming to my class. They'll just stop coming because he never ends. There's a mound right here. That's Mount Moriah. You're looking at Mount Moriah. And you can build something right up here, but there's not enough room for people to move around. So what they built Solomon built a retaining wall around the mound. Again, I'm exaggerating here, but he built like a sandbox all around this right here, and then he filled this in. Okay? That's still there today. I mean, we'll talk about this some more. That we only know this by one or two stones. And once Rittmeyer, Lean Rittmeyer, another friend of Carl Rassel, once he found those stones and identified this, they were covered up by the people in charge of the Temple Mount, which are Muslims, and you can't see them anymore. They're gone. Because he found this retaining, one of these stones. But anyway, I'll tell you that in a minute. Or not in a minute, another time. Okay, so now this is the retaining wall. Got it? And then on top of that, you build a wall, and you build your temple, and you have your altar, and this is where you have your religious services on top of Mount Moriah, okay? And that is on page 76, that's the black wall right there, which means how easy would it be to tunnel around underneath this floor right here? It's pretty easy because it's all fill. You see, it's not rock. This is rock, but all around in here, that's all fill, so you can tunnel around in there, and they do. Okay, now from there, let's go back to page 110. And you can see I don't have it in black anymore, but you can still see the original, Solomon's original platform. And it's still there. When Nebuchadnezzar tore down the temple, he didn't tear down the retaining wall. So we have to believe, in other words, if the Jews were in charge, they would probably have something excavated so you go up there and touch that wall. So you could touch the retaining wall of Solomon's, no doubt about it. I mean, it's... unless the Babylonians came and removed it. But nonetheless, when they come back in Nehemiah's day and Ezra's day to rebuild the temple, rebuild the walls after captivity, they built on that original platform. The Hasmoneans, during this time period, very quickly, I'm trying to show you this, they took and extended that wall to the south. They made it a little bit bigger. So here is Solomon's Temple Mount surface, looking down at it. The Hasmoneans, you see right there, there's an extension. And we'll talk about this bend in the wall right here. You can see a bend. This wall is still there, and there's a slight bend in it. You can see where the blocks don't even match up. You know when you put blocks together, you overlap them? You know what I'm saying? Like this. So it'd be like this in the seam of the wall. There's a point right there. You can see it. It looks like this. And over here on this side, it's called the straight seam. You can see where this was added on. Okay? That was Hasmonean. Okay, so they added a little bit to the south. Herod comes on, and Herod wants to make it bigger, more grand. He wants to do it like Rome would. He wants the emperors and the generals from Rome to come by and go, "My, Herod, you are indeed a Roman." And so Herod did at everything. Just like that. So Herod extends it down this way further. You can see there. Herod extended it over here. And he extended it up north like this. You can see this. This has been covered up. They found this. There's a joint right there. There's some stones. Boom. Covered up. I tried to get a picture of it. It's got rocks. It's got wire. They just covered it up so you can't see it. Okay. So now, this stone right here, you can see this stone right here. I got to tell you somehow, sometime. But you see Herod's platform going around like that. And so now this was all filled in. So it's one big flat, and this is what you have today. This is all one flat surface. The western wall is right here. And it's still got the Herodian stones. It's not one of the walls of the temple. The temple is gone. Jesus says every stone will be torn down, and there won't be one thing left. But the retaining wall, the Herodian retaining wall, you can see stones all the way around that. In fact, they've now tunneled, the Jews have tunneled all the way up to here, coming out on this side. And you can walk all in the western wall tunnels, walk all the way up here, and see and touch these stones all the way up to here. You can see it all the way down here. And eventually, by this time, you're out in the daylight. They've got to excavate all the way down. They turn the corner, you can still see it. So, I mean, we'll talk more about that. That's Herod's temple and Solomon's Temple Mount and how they built it on Mount Moriah. Okay, I'm going to quit. I'm going to pray. This goes on and on and on, and I just got to just... be gracious and socially correct and quit. So thank you very much for being here. Father, I do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for the evidence that you've provided for us that confirm the scriptures, but also, Father, we thank you for your faithfulness in history of watching over the believers, providing salvation for us, and we thank you that we have a finish of our story coming where you yourself will return. And we thank you for this truth. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Are there any questions as people leave? Any questions or thoughts or concerns? And I promise I will not open my book. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was kind of scared after the first week and second week. I think, well, will anybody come back? So it's nice to have you here. Thank you. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, you're still judging it, right? I don't blame you. Yes, they were of the priestly family of Hasmonean. So they'd be, that was their family name. An old father of theirs was Hasmonius. And they're the Maccabees. The Maccabees, if you don't mind me saying it, it was Mattathias was the father. He had six sons, Judas, Simon, John. But Judas was the one who really was the general that revolted against the Seleucids, the Greeks. And they struck with such force that they were called Judas the Hammer. And that is translated Hammers, Maccabee, the Maccabeans, the Hammers. Well, that was really their nickname, but really they're from the family of Hasmonius or Hasmoneans. And that was a priestly family. So they were priests or Levi. They're priests in the line of Aaron. Yes, and they became kings. Yep. They became king. They became the Hasmonean royalty. In fact, Herod married into that royal line. They became the royal line of the kings. He married Mariam, who was one of their grandchildren, so that he could marry. Herod married into the royal line. It's not the line of Judah. It's not the line of David, but they became the kings. Correct. Good question. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No. Well, it's one of those things where you get into it. It's kind of like you can answer the question, but then it's like there's so...
Right.
They had to have also